The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello, and thanks very much for tuning into this week's episode of the Ball Bags podcast. Delighted to be joined by the chef. Is it the chef? No, it's not the chef. It's the chief.
Far from a chef, I can assure you.
Little autocorrect
air fryer all the way.
a little autocorrect joke.
Yeah.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, Sasquatch. How are you?
I'm good. It's Friday Eve again. I always enjoy sitting down with you. Because who you are as a bloke, obviously, first and foremost. But it means the week is pretty much downhill.
Yeah.
Sitting down on a Thursday evening, it's always good.
Cruising into also, the weekend.
Also, and I know I talked about it a lot last week, but the NRL is officially back today. And my side, the Canberra Raiders, shellacked the side that knocked them out last year in the playoffs. So I'm fairly raucous. The Tash, if he's tuning in, has been sickened by me already today. That week one optimism.
Nice marker for the season straight out the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like they're kind of a side in transition as well. Like they've moved off some big pieces and stuff like that. It's all kind of young kids around some experienced pieces. So it was a great win. But yeah, look, I'm not going to dilly-dally. It's not the Irish NRL show. It is the Ball Bags. So look, tried and tested formula. Player of the week, Chief. Who is it and why?
So player of the week for me was Ruan Quinn for Munster from their game against Ebra at the weekend. The low-hanging fruit would have been Mike Haley with his man-of-the-match performance. His stats were off the charts in that game, metres made and carries and stuff. He's looking pretty sharp after coming back from injury. But Ruan Quinn popped up with two tries and like another robust back row from the Munster Academy. Still only 20. Big future ahead for this guy, I think. As far as I know, he's still in the academy. He's not even on a senior deal. So it's like he is, you know, like the serious options in that back row now. And he got his chance at the weekend and he actually kept Gavin Coombs tryless at the weekend.
Yes. Nice. Sometimes Gavin Coombs does a good job doing that himself.
Yeah.
The Connacht game springs to mind.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
Here's Eve. I apologise in advance. Will seem like I'm having a dig, but my player of the week, Phil Foden. Look, last weekend, plenty of activity. I'm not sure there was any kind of standout fixtures, really. Heading into the weekend, obviously, a lot of talk around the Manchester Derby, as always. Whether it's the game that Sky Sports tell us it is, I don't really believe that. But I always like on these derbies to like look at the local lads, the lads who it probably means more to. And look, Phil Foden, two goals, 89 minutes, something like 116 touches. And then of his passes accurately 79 out of 83, so 95% pass. I just thought he really did stamp on the game. He's a local lad. I think he's
Stockport or Salford, somewhere like that. Yeah.
Or Stockport. It could be Stockport. So look, he obviously come to the Manchester City system. I mean, look, we know what Man City are, but they are starting to produce the academy players now, which is kind of scary that they could buy anyone, but they may no longer need to. Which, look, say what you want about Saudi money, and I'm fairly topical on that, but what they've done for the city of Manchester and football in Manchester has been exceptional, because I think the Man United drop off is a result of ownership at Man United as opposed to ownership anywhere else in the city. So yeah, look, my player of the week was Phil Foden.
I begrudgingly will concede defeat and give Phil Foden the player of the week.
Do you think just quality of opposition alone?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like Zebra in Virgin Media Park or Manchester Derby, you know, like as much of a shambles as United can be at times, they did take the lead in that game, you know, to put a bit of pressure on. But yeah, Foden is just he just seems to thrive in the derbies and big games, like, you know, against like even Liverpool and Everton, like any of those teams in the northwest area, like he steps up, like so happy to concede, and well, sorry, not unhappy to concede and give you the win this week.
Fair. I'd given a few pushovers in recent weeks, so I think it was due it. But look, main crux of the show, agree to disagree, hit me up.
So reports this week suggest some players are unhappy in the England camp, this Six Nations, due to a lack of attacking work or ball handling in training, and with media pressure from ex-players, pundits on Steve Borthwick, do the players and pundits and fans alike need to lower their current expectations on the group and give Borthwick more time to implement his plan, or is it justified?
I have a few different angles on this. So firstly, what is it about an English national team and media
and the right to be number one
and just media just constantly churning angles, and it's got to be a horrific position, be it association football or rugby, or like even rugby league can get quite hot-headed at times, and there's three countries that play that really in the world. I'd imagine if I paid much attention to a cricket, it's probably in a similar boat. The thing I would always hark back to, and I would say statistically he's not a million miles off being Ireland's greatest ever head coach in Andy Farrell. Year one, there was significant calls for him to leave. It was year one of a World Cup cycle as well. Maybe year two, actually. And it was a key victory against England the weekend of Paddy's Day that really saved his bacon. But there was, because he'd lost to Wales, went on to one of the most bizarre Six Nations. Wales obviously had, I think every game they played in, someone got sent off.
Yeah, it was the card slam, wasn't it? I think they called it or something that year.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ireland just were not good that year. Some growing pains, like obviously we were playing Billy Burns at 10. You hadn't this plethora of talent that come through. Like, I know he's kind of since kind of pretty much fallen down the pecking order, but Kelleher came through that Six Nations, and you had all these players coming to the fore during that Six Nations. I think that was the Six Nations Bundy actually got kicked to the sidelines as well, reinvigorated himself and come back, and obviously he's been player of the week a few weeks this year. So there's always that element of just sticking with a head coach, especially when you've had the furore they've had over the last 12 months heading into a World Cup. I think they can, like, Borthwick was picked as England head coach because he was the best man for the job, because what he was doing domestically.
Yeah.
So who do you replace him with?
That's the thing, like, who is out there that fits what England need? Steve Hansen's not going to come and take the England job. Like,
no.
O'Gara has said he'd be open to it, but obviously there was talk that it approached him before they went with Bortwick and stuff. Maybe someone like him, you know, he doesn't want to cut his teeth internationally with Ireland first or whatever, maybe try England. It could be him, but like you look at their last, they've lost one game in their last 10 going back to the start of the World Cup, mm-hmm. and that was by 1 point to South Africa in the semi-final. They could have been, like, they were one solid scrum away from winning that. Like, it was a, you could call it a dodgy scrum penalty against them. South Africa kick it and go 16-15 ahead. That could have been a very different outcome for them. You know, they could have been a back-to-back World Cup finalist themselves. And this pressure isn't on Bortwick then. They lost to Scotland by only 9 points. Yeah, scrappy wins against Wales and England, but they're trying to implement new defence with Felix Jones, and attack wise, okay, they're probably like they're one of the higher kick chaser teams in the Six Nations. So if you get your defence right with that style of play, teams aren't going to score against you, and you get a chance of, like they did against Argentina in the World Cup, kick your way to a win. And like, success is winning matches, you know, that's what it boils down to, like obviously trophies and stuff, mm-hmm. but half the battle is you win your matches. The style will come as you get the right players in, like, and bearing in mind they've lost a lot of leadership there going into the Six Nations with Owen Farrell and Courtney Laws and a few others. So, like, and then I just think some of the ex-players that are calling out Bortwick and the style are dinosaurs. They retired 35 years ago, you know, like before the professional era. So, it's...
Out of interest, do you have kind of who the journalist in question is, or leaked?
No, I don't have the journalist. It's just, it was stuff I seen kind of on Twitter, like, you know, like snippets of coming out and stuff. But like Will Carling as an ex player, big credit. You know,
Will Carling was controversial as a player, let alone giving him airtime or,
and then like with the, like the players, they could have been just having a chat the same as we are, like, oh, you know, oh, we're not getting much ball in hand time, you know, and it's like we're just doing defense, and it's like could be completely taken out of context, like to an extent.
Absolutely. And then look, there is always the element that always screams in the back of my head, and that, like, and maybe this is a bit of a biased take, but I would say aesthetically we're one of the best countries in the world to watch play rugby. We are yet to win a knockout game of World Cup rugby. I know, look, I'm difficult against the All Blacks, and mm-hmm. we weren't always aesthetically pleasing, but I don't think the Springboks are too aesthetic to watch.
But they're 4-time World Cup champions, you know.
Mm. And they play a brutal brand of rugby. And I mean that in the physical sense.
Yeah, not as in turn that off. It's not good. Like, it's just the physicality of it.
Abrasive.
But yeah, I really think that, you know, there's exciting players there in the Premiership. They just, you can't, in one sense, it's like everyone wants the England team to play maybe like Northampton. But Northampton don't have 15... English qualified starters playing like Leinster. So essentially with Ireland we have a lot of Leinster influence on the national team, and then made up with the other provinces and stuff. So it's very cohesive and easy to implement because players know each other better and have more time together. Maybe with the switch to a kind of central or hybrid contract in the UK or in England, it may allow that to happen, that if the clubs release the players a bit more for certain camps and stuff, it but it's going to take time. But I think, like, the job that Portrick done at Leicester in a short space of time, he got them back to champions, is the reason why he is the manager or the coach of England. So, and he's putting good pieces there. You know, Felix Jones, two-time World Cup winning coach himself, and possibly rumours of maybe Mike Catt being brought back in there, into the England fold, you know. So all you have to do is look at what he's done with Ireland to...
My final thing to just throw into this is, and I know they're not linked, but just when you brought up what Bortwick did, obviously the headline today, I didn't get to read the article, busy day with the day job, but Leicester are facing sanctions for issues with their P&L account. And when you throw in the last 24 months, domestic rugby's not in a good state in England, so how could it not have, maybe not a huge effect, but some effect on the international scene as well? So, look, English rugby is in a bit of a strange place, truth be told, whether some journalists choose to believe it or not. I would say, like, looking at your top tier countries, and I'm going to exclude Italy from that list, I know they're in the Six Nations, but if they all had job openings in the morning, next to Australia, England is the second least appeasing.
As a project, yeah.
So, yeah. And yet they're still a lot more competitive internationally than Australia are. So, yeah, look. In all sunshine and roses, Will Greenwood, in the little bubble you live in the Twickenham Stoop, where rugby's affluent, but there's a whole nation there. So look, we digress. Mine should hope.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hopefully be a bit more tongue-in-cheek and a bit just personal opinion. I just kind of heavily biased by Monday's Premier League action. So 94 teams have been relegated from the English top flight, starting back obviously in 92-93. But only a special handful make it into the dismal pantheon that is the worst Premier League teams of all time. And even though they've already surpassed Derby's record low points tally, Sheffield United are potentially one of them.
I think as bad as Derby's points total was, I don't think a team has actually performed maybe as poorly as Sheffield United have. Three home games in a row where they've conceded 5+ goals. That's criminal. Like, that should not happen. At home, it should not happen. It's like, put 11 men on the line, do something, and you're not going to concede as many. But it's like, they're such a yo-yo team. Like, they get less than 20 points when they come back into the Premier League after spending millions under promotion just to go straight back down, and then to have another good year. Sometimes it takes 2 years, but they always bounce back within 24 months of being relegated. But it's the constant up and down yo-yo and all of it. I actually think they would be better off sacrificing finishing outside the top six in the Championship, establishing themselves there for a number of years, a bit like Leeds. Leeds were a long time. But there are similar teams where Leicester, you know, it's like a couple of years just established, get some core guys into, you know, proper positions. Like, you know, you have your goalie, your centre, like your spine of your team. Build around that and then don't go crazy. Add one or two pieces. Fulham are another team that, you know, they've seemed to have put the ship in the right direction now, but very much like that.
The only thing controversial, well, like in opposition to your comment, kind of is like we've brought Leicester. You could probably bring up Villa, but I know Leeds have come back down, but they're up for quite a few years. And Fulham, they're all sides who went down once, if that makes sense. I know Leeds have gone down a second time, but they're not this in this yo-yo purgatory a la Norwich. The side they should actually probably be properly studying is Wolves. They were a yo-yo side. They're now more established in the Premier League. There's a few facts just to kind of throw it out. Obviously, we're on about points, but there's other things that factor into a side being not as good. So, no side has ever conceded more goals than Swindon in
92, 93.
What year did Swindon go down?
93, 94.
Had this all... 93, 94. Swindon in that season had four games where they lost games by five plus goals. So they had four times that happened. Sheffield United have already had six. Still a few games to go. Derby, this infamous Derby side had five, and then look, there's this number of sides on four games where that happened. So Swindon Town, 1994, Barnsley, 97-98, Wigan, 2009-2010, and Norwich, 2021-2022. But I think it's their defense. So look, this can all slightly change, but in terms of average goals conceded per game, that Swindon side is 2.38 goals per game. Sheffield United are currently at 2.67, so substantially ahead again. And in terms of their projected goals conceded, they're projected to concede 101, one more than that infamous Swindon side. And no one comes close to either two of them. I think Ipswich conceded 93 goals in 94-95 season. And that Derby side that only amassed 11 measly points conceded 89. So, look, they played a lot tighter. I know Sheffield have got the points. And look, they probably will pick up a few more points and it'll be respectable. I don't think they're going to go the season defeated here on out. But I struggle to see them getting 20 points. And they join. They'll probably be sit. I'm just looking at the kind of the worst sides to go down. So Portsmouth finished with 19. That was after a 9-point deduction for going into administration. So a little bit more than that. The Villa side we mentioned that went down 17 points. Huddersfield in 2018-2019, they were brutal. They finished with 16. Sunderland 15, and that Derby side 11. So I see them somewhere along Sunderland finishing with the 15.
Yeah, it's hard to see them picking up too many points, but you do expect them to pick up at least a couple of draws or something along the way. I just think it's manner in which they're losing. You know, like, as you say, their projected goals conceded to be 101. That's 12 more than Derby, and they're lowest points scored season. It's like no one gives a toss when they're playing.
It's worse than that. Like, it is really worse. Like, you're looking at kind of the standings. It's like Everton have been deducted 6 points and they're still in 16th. The three sides that come up are not particularly fantastic. Look, Everton has a soft spot for Luton. I want them to try and step. They've 20 points amassed so far. We're not probably talking about Burnley as much, simply because they're trying to play good football. They have the same amount of points, 13, but their goal difference is minus 35 versus Sheffield United's minus 50. It's the problem with me for Sheffield is they've struggled all year. They're going down at a rate of knots, and they've a few records that are exemplary. So the 8-0 loss to Newcastle is set a record for most individual goal scorers in the game as well. Like, they're tied with infamy. I think they've got to be one of the worst sides.
I fully agree. I think maybe that Sunderland team in, was it 2015 or something? Whichever, the 15 points, that was a bad team. But I think, they have to, just one of the worst Premier League clubs, do you know, like, over the history, like, the amount of times they've come up and down.
Yeah.
Now, Norwich, very much in that same category as you know, as, like, the
bracket.
They're probably, I haven't been following the Championship much, but I think, like, they're probably teetering in around the playoffs or whatever, and, you know, but...
No, they will be. They're surviving on
partnership
and payments and stuff like that. And no, you do you're wonder, okay. Are we?
The key to that parachute payment being a success is bouncing straight back. Because if you go down again, you get another parachute payment. So, you know, it can keep them afloat, like, for a couple of years, So, yeah, it's.
Yeah, now saying that, I am looking at Norwich right here now. So last season they finished 13th in the Championship. And then this season they're just outside the playoff spots. They're currently in 7th. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them not come up again this year. But it would make you wonder, are we getting to a stage where it finally is becoming too big of a gap between the Premiership and the Championship? Considering all three teams are kind of... could potentially this season.
Yeah, I know.
Straight back down.
If you go back to the Oval Ball in England, the closed off promotion, relegation, like there's no relegation in from the top tier now. I think that's for next 2 years at least or something like that. You don't want to come to a case where that is the case, in the Premier League. I don't think.
Tend to disagree. I think it's easy for us. That's never going to fly in England. But I think as global sports fans, it's probably in the best interest that if you want to grow the brand globally, you need your, for want of a better phrasing, you don't want clubs, you want franchises. It gets more sustainable investment.
If you were to go down that road, though, bases, do you... cap it at 20 teams or do you cut it to 16?
I think it's a very controversial opinion. There's two things. One, the football pyramid in England is probably just far too big. I think as much as people bang on about it, Forest Green are never going to play in the Premier League. And we need to accept that. And just because you can draw in 1,000 people to watch a game, it doesn't mean it should be fucking professional. And that's a harsh reality, but maybe people at those levels probably need to just realise it's a passion, it's a hobby. And similar to an AAL rugby player in Ireland, they play, or an inter-county player in Ireland, maybe for the lesser counties, then look, is pretty much professional at this stage in the bigger counties. But my real controversial take is European Super League isn't a bad idea, and it's not going away either. We're just kicking the can in the road, and I think ultimately it is what's going to happen. And unfortunately, we invited venture capitalists into the game a long time ago. We've reaped the benefits, and now they're going to start to reap their benefits, and we can't really complain.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's my depressing take.
Back to the pyramid structure. The state of association, probably football. The pyramid, the point of the pyramid is probably the Championship down, and then the Premier League is the pedestal above it. Like, you know,
for the avid listener, that
what about Salford
ringing to say you can't kill the football pyramid? Yeah, because Let me tell you, that impassioned speech at the time of the European Super League would have been oh so differently had it gone ahead and Sky kicked off their new season with the European Super League the following August. I'll tell you that much, for not free, but for little to no money. Well, look, let's get to more positive notes. Let's look, be more optimistic. And this weekend's must-watch TV. What have you got for us, Chief, and why?
With Clippers against the Bucks, Sunday evening at 7 o'clock.
Why?
Look,
why have you gone there?
I couldn't pick City and Liverpool as much as it's a good game. just thought I'd diversify, and I was looking. There's a couple of other games, but times don't really suit. Look, you're looking at fourth in the West against second in the East here, so good matchup. You know, so I said, yeah, that looks like nice Sunday evening relaxer to stick on and calm down, I suppose, on, before the dreads of Monday work comes back.
They're saying that I was going to suggest the Celtics Warriors last week. It was a half eight kick off, tip off, and I'm bloody well delighted I didn't, because let me tell you, that was a blowout. And it would have been worth watching for the spectacle, but delighted I didn't suggest it for the fan. Perfect. My must see TV is very, very low hanging fruit and something that'll burn a fire in the chest of the most casual Irish rugby fan, is England versus Ireland. It's on at 4:45 on, I've gone ITV just to be controversial, but it's no doubt on Virgin Media on Saturday. So whatever you're doing, no matter what the wife says, no matter what the kids say,
I think every Irish rugby fan looks forward to England, probably more so, maybe not as much as the All Blacks, say, or South Africa lately, but it's the must watch game.
I don't know about that. And if it had been the only thing that could have made this fixture better,
absolutely,
could have made this much better, is if it was next weekend. Only thing,
especially when it's in Dublin. It's like the best weekend, the old enemy.
It can be good in Twickenham too as well, a long weekend away in London with the lads, and you know, you've got a bank holiday.
Something else just to rub it in if the result goes the right.
There's something special right with that as well. Too,
bank holiday Monday, lads.
Look, not to disenfranchise our English viewers, but look, it'll be a good game. I think it'll probably be, given what I predicted for Ireland, France didn't pan out, I think it'll probably be the game of Six Nations. Styles mates fights and all that, and I think they're really going to slow us down. I don't think we're going to.
They'll probably target the breakdown in a big way in this one.
Initial thoughts, anyway. But look, I think someone's going to do something stupid. I think there's a red card in this game.
If he even makes the 23,
probably Freddie Stewart. Look, that's all for me.
That's all for me.
Tuning in ahead of your weekend. Thank you, and good night.